track session number 20475, reel 1.
Mr. Gonciarowski, reel 1. Where were you born, please?
I was born in Warsaw on the 25th of October, 1923.
Did you grow up and have your schooling in Warsaw?
I had part of my schooling in Warsaw, part in two other cities in Poland.
Which cities?
City of Lodz and city of Lwów.
You were saying that your mother was French?
Yes. She married a Pole. Do you want me to continue?
Yes, please.
My grandfather, maternal grandfather, was a civil engineer, building railways and bridges. And since he lived in the part of Poland annexed or occupied by the Austrian Empire, he was looking for work anywhere in Europe. He found excellent conditions and necessity by French railways to build in France. And for many years he built railways and bridges there. There he got married to a local woman in close to Bordeaux. And all their children were born there, so was my mother. But just before the First World War, the French expelled all the citizens of Austrian Empire and Germany out from France, those that were doing strategic work. And railways and bridges were strategic. So my grandfather was chucked out of France, came back to Krakow, which was the city that he came from. And of course took his wife and all the children with him. And found work in the Austrian Empire, in the part of Poland called Galicia, which is southern part of Poland. Of course, after the First World War, Poland became an independent country. All families stayed in Poland. All of them conversed in French at home. All of them went to, that means my uncles and my aunts, and they went to a French educational establishments before the war, but they all became Poles, though there was a lot of French culture at home, but mother cooked in Polish way, behaved in a Polish way, and brought up the family, my mother, like Poles. And all the others, my aunts and my uncles, their children become 100% Polish. Perhaps also because the daughters, my aunts, they married people who were deeply Polish, patriotic. So the family is a 100% Polish family. We could claim French nationality because through mother. But my brother lived in France for a couple of years, but he wouldn't. I wouldn't either. I mean, when I came to England, it was very, very difficult. But I could have gone to France and claimed French nationality, but it never appealed to me. Frankly, the French don't appeal to me.
Where were you living on the 1st of September 1939?
On the 1st of September, I was in Lvov, where my father retired and lived with the family there.
Can you tell me what happened to you on that day?
On that day, together with my brother, we spent most of the day on the roof of our house. Because from the roof of our house, we could see the whole city. Our house was a little bit outside the city on a hill. The city of Lvov is like Rome, positioned on seven hills. And from our hill and our roof, we could see the whole city. And we saw places which got bombed, places from which the smoke rose. And then we also ran to, on the hill we had some troops with anti-aircraft guns. So we also went with my brother there to help carrying munitions or bringing food to the soldiers.
How much danger were you in?
I don't think there was any danger. In fact, the Germans did demolish the station, and they also demolished the biggest factory producing alcoholic drinks, one of the oldest in the whole of Europe and most famous. But otherwise, there was no carpet bombing or no terror bombing in town.
What happened to you after the 1st of September?
Well, because Lvov is on southeastern part of Poland, people were fleeing from Poland, and family were fleeing from Western Poland, from all sorts of places, and everybody was coming to our flat. At one time, I think we had something like 14 or 15 people staying with us, which were aunts, uncles, God knows what. Especially those from Silesia and from Northwest Poland. Some of them eventually cleared off by going to Romania. Some of them stayed with us as long as till Christmas. We ourselves were trying to make ourselves helpful to the war effort. I was a scout. I had a troop of my own. So what we did is, on the northern part of the city, we manned the places which give notice of aircrafts coming and that sort of thing. And that lasted for about 2 weeks. 15th or 16th of September, the Polish forces around the city, in fact, had beaten a couple of German divisions outside, and the Germans withdrew a little. But they only withdrew to let the Russians in. On the 17th, I think, in the evening, the Russian troop walked in, and it wasn't very pleasant. They didn't rape or they didn't steal, but to look at them, we really cried, because these troops were Eastern Mongolians. They were badly dressed, they were badly equipped, but very soon we had very little to say, because the local police changed from Polish to Ukrainians. You know, this part of Poland is shared equally between, was shared equally between Poles and Ukrainians. And the Ukrainians hoped that they will be better off in the Soviet Union than they were in Poland. And therefore, the moment the Soviet Union became the power, they all became communists. And very soon we lost half of our flat. The police came in and brought a couple of Russian officers and told us to clear off from a couple of rooms in our flat and put those in and say, this, everything that is in there belongs to them and you've got no rights over this part of the flat. And we then were very squeezed because we had three people. We had two aunts and uncles still from Poland, from Western Poland. We had our maid. So it was really tight squeeze for a period. But when you are very young, because when I was 15 or what, in 1939, I was 16, and we are very naive because we were children that were, both our parents were very protective of us. So we were not what you would call a youth of the world. We were very, very protective, protected, naive and gentle. And of course, in the Soviet Union, to survive, you have to be a wolf. And soon enough, we became like three wolves.
Why did you have to be a wolf under the Soviets?
Because there is no food. So you've got to find it somewhere. So you've got to steal, or you've got to get yourself in a position that you can get something for nothing. People queue up 6 hours for a loaf of bread. And if you happen to have two or three guys who form ahead of the queue, the very head of the queue by the door, then you can go in and out, and take three loaves before anybody else gets it. And then you can flog it. Or I used to go with a band of friends of mine, mostly Jewish, that would queue up the day before. They knew that there is something coming to a particular shop, and they would queue up. What was it? It was soap, ordinary soap. And there was about 80 queuing up from beginning to the line. Then there were a couple of hundreds. Next morning there was 1,000 people queuing. Nobody knew what they were queuing for, but when you saw a queue, you stopped. You only saw whether it's moving or not moving. But of course it wasn't moving because the first 80 were going like this.
Round and round?
Round and round. And when you had a briefcase full of soap, though you were only getting one bit a time, but when you've been there 10 times, you had 10 bits. Then two women, Jewish women, would take that from you, go outside the town on the gates of the town where the peasants were coming from the countryside, and they would exchange it there for butter, for bread. And this way you could get food. You had to move your wits if you think that my father has not been paid, had no money because all the money in the banks were stopped. So he had no capital. But he had expense of feeding three children, our cook, our aunt and uncle. So,
what was your father's job?
When he was alive, when he was before he retired, my father was a commodore in the Polish Navy. He was the chief of medical staff of the whole of the Polish Navy. Then he retired in 1935. For the next 2 years, he became a director of a hospital trust in the city of Lodz, which was the newest and the biggest hospital in Poland, the most modern. It had air conditioning. And father was the director general of that hospital for 2 years, and then he retired for good. I mean, by education, he was a doctor. When he retired, he came to the city from which he came, generally. He was born in Lvov, and he always said that to Lvov he will go even if he's got to do it on his knees. And I must say that I fully endorse this. Of course, this is still now, for us, it's not a place to live because it's no longer Poland, it's Ukraine.
What else happened to you under Soviet rule?
What else happened? Father was arrested, taken away to prison. We were thrown out altogether from that flat. So that for a period of time, my sister lived in the hospital that she worked. She was taking the night duty in the hospital, and during the day she found always some place that she could sleep. My brother lived in the state place where they got the waterworks, city waterworks. And I lived in my sports club. I was at that time a very good swimmer, a junior champion of Western Ukraine. And I could go to the club, to the swimming pool, and sleep in the swimming pool, in the where you're changing rooms. Because generally, if a person was arrested from the family, you had to find out when there are a lot of wagons, cattle wagons, getting ready at the station. Then you knew that sooner or later they will start taking people and taking them to the Soviet, like Kowima, or like Dr. Weidenfeld, when his family was taken. And if you could survive 3 nights, the transports went, if they didn't catch you, because they didn't find you, then you were safe for another 6 months or so. And so I think father was already 5 months in prison. And we used to go to the prison. There were three prisons in Lvov. So you had to go in, stand in a queue and trying to give a parcel. Maybe nothing in the parcel, maybe only a piece of bread. But then a few minutes later, the fellow would come to the door and says, "There isn't a fellow like this in this prison." So you knew he's not here. You went to another one. And then in one of the prisons, they accepted the parcels. It means that your father was there. So my sister went, I went, my younger brother went. Eventually we found father. And eventually we even had some communications with father. And I must say my sister was very brave. She went to the office of the procurator, what would you call him? The man that is in charge of the case. And she said, all right, so our father is a capitalist, he is a bourgeois, but we are not. We have our rights. Said, we are on the street and we are children. And she said, the Soviet Union must look after the young generation. So he said, yes, yes. You go to the place where you lived before tomorrow and wait there in the afternoon. So we waited outside the house. Lori came in with some Soviet soldiers, some papers, and went up to our flat, and the a Russian opened the door because the place was already full of Russians. So he said, what do you want here? So my sister said she wants the desk, my father's desk, and she wants our library, the wardrobe for books. So he said, yes, library you can have, desk you can't have. And he gave us a stand for hats. Put it on the lorry and you go with us. So we went, we didn't know where we were going. We got, I don't know, half a mile away to another house, stopped, went up with the papers to the first floor. An old woman opened up. So he gave her the paper in front of her and said, now, Gazarovskis, three of them, they're going to live here in this last room of your flat. Anything that is in that room must stay there. It's theirs, not yours. And there were two old women who were teachers of French teachers. They had three very nice rooms, big flat, three large rooms, kitchen, bathroom. And the last room in the corridor, he moved our stuff there, and that was ours. He took one pair of keys off them and said, this is yours, and that's where you live. We knew we can live there only until they will start taking people out to Russia. So when we were sure that maybe tomorrow, day after tomorrow, they will start at night, then we moved out of the flat. Sure enough, they did come for us, but we went there. If they went somewhere, and for instance, you slept at your friend's, they would, and they came to pick up the friends, they would pick you up as well. But as it happens, because we were going to places where they didn't expect people to live, like my sister in the hospital, me in the sports club, and my brother at the waterworks, pump rooms, because a father of one of best friends of my brother was the in charge of pump rooms, and he would let him in and he would sleep there. So we lived under Soviet until the war broke out between Germany and Russia. And then within 2 weeks we were liberated by Germans. So I was twice liberated. Once by Russians, once by Germans.
What was the so-called liberation by the Germans like?
It wasn't any better. Except that against the Germans, it was easier to work against them. Very quickly, I left Lvov because it was a small city, a comparatively small city, and it was a city which was very dangerous because it had too many Ukrainians, which were very well with Germans. So...
Why was it easier to work against the Germans than against the Russians?
Because Germany and Germans were natural enemies of the Polish nation and Polish state. And there were no division between one pole and another. Everybody hated them.
Whereas there were divisions against the Russians?
There were, because this was ideology. There were some people who were communists. Not many of them, but there were some. There were... Also, the Russians have a different way of working. They have a lot of provocation. They have ability to think how to get at your subconsciousness. They are trained in it under czars for centuries. Their police may be clumsy in catching people, but once they get you, there is practically no defense. Sooner or later, they'll get at your brain and they'll fish up what they want. It needs a terrific will and character not to surrender. If you think of what was happening there over a period of 70 years, how many people actually came out with flying colors? Sharansky, the one that is in Israel now, was immigration minister. Bykovsky, a writer. Solzhenitsyn, again, and Sakharov, but very, very many, few. With Germans, it's different. Eh? They catch you, they'll kill you. All right. But they have no patience. If you have secret information and you get caught, they will beat you, they'll torture you, and eventually they'll kill you because they have no patience. The Russians will not kill you. They will get this out of you by hook or crook, whether they keep you 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, and they'll get it out of you.
But you weren't in the hands of the Russian police.
Hmm?
You personally were not in the hands of the Russian police?
No.
What impression did the Germans first make when they came into Lvov?
They make excellent impression in one way. They were beautifully turned up. They had beautiful equipment. Their motorcycles were BMWs. Their soldiers looked good. And the first day, they started going around and shooting Jews on the street. And in fact, they shot two of friends of mine.
Did you see it?
Yes.
What happened?
Because one of them was in my... I had a sort of a military coat, three-quarters of a coat, a little bit like English cavalry coat. And he was from Western Poland, a Jew which fled from there, and he fled with nothing on except what he had on himself. And I, in fact, gave him the coat. And I don't know how it happened, but it was in the city park. Two or three of us met, and some Germans were passing, stopped and looked at this group of ours, and there were two Jews there, and probably two or three Gentiles. And they shoveled those Gentiles out and shot the Jews there and then.
In the head?
Yes. Boom, boom, boom. And they just leave them there lying, and that's it. I had... All you had to do is with the Germans, there was, you know, you could, if you were chased by Germans, and you jumped into a block of flats,